We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Bill, how tough a decision was it yesterday to release Ben Watson? What did he bring to the team going back to camp?
Like Ben, just we don't have a roster spot for him right now, and so maybe that'll change. But for the moment, that's where it is.
You know, Coach Belichick pretty much told me what he told you all, that they didn't have a roster spot, which just means that, you know, they didn't feel like they wanted to add me to the roster and remove someone else. That's his job. You've heard it from him. He's clearly one of the best all time to coach, and that's his job, is to do what he thinks is best for the organization, and he did what he felt was best, and that did not include me.
So think about that, Lou Maloney. When you get that stink eye from Bill Belichick, apparently he's giving you the exact same answer that he's given to the players.
See, that's the part that makes Bill great, is that when everybody has an issue with him, he's always consistent. Being Ben in that situation and it sounding exactly like he told us on Monday. Well, I don't have a roster spot. Oh, okay, thanks. And then Ben just says, is that it? Nothing else?
Yeah.
Nope, that's it.
No, okay. That's it.
It's so like, what do you say?
It's like Moneyball. When you ask Jonah Hill to cut a guy.
Yeah.
We're trading you. And that's it. Don't give him anything else. So, no, it's
not. Jonah Hill was the actor.
It's not, yeah, Jonah Hill was the actor. It's not that that I don't believe that that's what he said to him. You know, it's just short and sweet. We don't roster spot. The question is, do you believe that? You know, do you believe that having a guy like Cody Kessler as your third quarterback on your roster, that you couldn't find a quarterback throw footballs for a practice squad eligible type player? That I know special teams is very important, but we all know Jordan Richards. I don't know. Maybe he can't play safety. Maybe he's good in special teams. And we talked about this the other day. Like, you know, not we're going to start questioning Bill on, like, what, you really need this and roster?
Yeah, you're going to dictate.
The way he puts a roster together. But you wonder, in an area that is very thin. You know, now we all know what happened with Antonio Brown, right? The thin at wide receiver, they let him go. The thin at tight end, I'm pretty sure the thin at tight end. Matt LaCoste has never really been healthy. Izzo's still young. That you had an opportunity to maybe, if you're going to keep depth at one of the couple of positions, you would think it would be tight end. So do you really not a roster spot? Or was it $2 million, given what has happened to your ball club the last 4 weeks? Again, if Ben Watson never got suspended,
that's it.
I think he would have been on the team week one. LaCoste didn't play week one. He didn't play week three.
Right. Yep.
So he was hurt.
Yeah.
So if he never got suspended, would be on this team? I think it'd be he and Ian Izzo.
Yeah, I think he would be.
And that record would be broken.
A
shame.
But Bill's not going to sit there and tell a player, hey, listen, and maybe some guys do. Maybe some GMs, some coaches do that. He's not going to sit there and say, we need you $2 million because we're trying to make other moves down the road. That's not Belichick. He's not going to do that. But I think you'd be naive not to think that that's the purpose here, looking at what you've got with the player, hearing Brady talk about experience and how he needs experience. And you're right, Lou. He needs experience at tight end as well as wide receiver.
I don't know if it's – I don't – There is this the timing of it really sucks, because I do believe if he wasn't suspended, then he'd be on the roster. He'd be on the team. His salary would be guaranteed, and they'd really have to think about whether or not they could benefit from releasing him. So sure enough, he's gone. The team goes on their way. They're undefeated. But why was Ben any different than Julian Edelman, Rob Ninkovich, Rodney Harrison, any of these other guys that had to serve a 4-game suspension? When those guys came back, there was a roster spot for them. They were back in a minute.
But they were better.
So,
I mean, I'm just saying they were.
Younger.
I mean,
they were younger, more
in their prime. You know, maybe not Ninkovich. He only played another year or so. But they were guys that were on the roster already that I think that they looked at. They had roles. They knew who they were. And they said, okay, we got to fill the gap here for 4 weeks when these guys come back. With Ben, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a lock. If was Ben Watson when he was 28? Yeah, probably. He's on this team. When he comes back, we're going to make a move. We're going to find a spot. We'll find a spot for him. But at 38, and by the way, I could save $2 million. So I guarantee we're going to find a spot for this guy.
So you talked about if he were here and he not suspended, would he be on the team? And I agree, he would have been on the roster day one. If Antonio Brown incident never happened, if Antonio Brown was never here, would he be on the roster? He'd probably be on the roster with Demaryius Thomas.
Yeah, because you wouldn't have the financial restraints that you're at right now.
Right.
Yes.
So those two events kind of changed everything for him. But the Patriots are still in the same predicament. They don't have Ben Watson. They don't have Demaryius Brown. They don't have Antonio Brown, even though he's willing to come back right now. Well, he knows you're going to pay him anyway. But how do the Patriots do that? If the Patriots are looking to get their $9 or $10 million back, there is no freaking way that they can bring him back.
So I don't know what you guys think the ceiling is for Lacoste and Izzo, but I think
you tell us. You played the position.
Well,
what do you think?
Listen, I think Lacoste could probably be more productive than Izzo. I think Izzo is an average blocker.
Who can block though?
He's an average blocker. Right. He's okay.
Okay.
He's not overwhelming. He's not overpowering. I mean, he's okay.
Yeah, but the problem is
he's an okay player
against good defensive teams and good.
You got to run the
rush
other way.
Guys,
run the other way.
Thank you.
You know, give him a running start. Give him a wham block. Put him in motion. Keep him off the ball. Let him combo. Something like that. Point of attack out of a 3-point stance. You're not going to win that battle. But Lacoste, I mean, he's got some shiftiness to him. He dropped that one pass, the very first play of the freaking game. He drops the easiest route.
Yeah.
He drops the stick route. Okay, fine. He makes up for it. But he's got a long way to go, but I wouldn't be surprised if he caught 30 passes by the end of the season.
Well, they may need it out of necessity. He may catch 30 passes.
Or, sure enough, they don't do anything. They bring in Tyler Eifert or some other dude, and he's just a backup to the backup.
But there's no doubt in my mind that the Patriots will make at least one major deal, if not two. Now, I'm not sure they do anything in the offensive line. The Trent Williams thing, people keep on bringing it up. The money's too great. Plus, you're looking at getting Isaiah Wynn back. You know that
and
once you
Nikhil
get...
And Harry.
Right.
Don't forget about him.
Okay. But I'm not looking at him as much as I'm looking at Isaiah Wynn. Isaiah Wynn, to me, solves your problem in the line. That fair
Wait,
to
but,
say?
Well, yes. But hold on.
Solves the problem.
And you know what he can do.
Correct.
And even though it was just like Jimmy Garoppolo, even though it was like a game and a half, or whatever he played, right? You know what he looked like.
Yep.
So it was, okay, you've got a left tackle coming back, right? As long as health-wise, whatever. Nikhil Harry, you still don't know. You're basing it on a first-round talent.
I think I do.
And his physical abilities. But you don't know. As we hear from Tom Brady, and good God, you don't even have to read between the lines. He's saying it in front of everybody. That the rookies, you can't count on them.
Go back and look at Malcolm
Young kids,
Mitchell's,
you can't count on.
Malcolm Mitchell's first year.
That's great.
He had such an underrated Super Bowl where he was making catch after catch after catch. Again, you had a long list of studs.
Just because one
but
guy
I guess
did it
my
doesn't
point
mean
is
another guy could.
I think people look at this offense and they think that it's impossible to understand. It isn't. So we are going to give you a small portion. We're going to see how much you can digest at first. Very small portion. It's really easy. And I say this all the time because that stick routes, slants, go, shallow crosses, all that stuff that's easy, digs, comebacks. Hey, just listen, I can tell if you're going to beat the guy or not. That, to me, both these young players serve such a huge purpose of this team moving forward. Isaiah Wynn and Harry, both of these guys, because we always talk about it. You can deal with injuries on a team. You can't deal with injuries all in one position.
But here's
offensive
the thing.
Line, wide receiver.
Let me tell you about Malcolm Mitchell. Okay, I agree. We all know loved what he did in that Super Bowl and what he did that rookie year. In Malcolm Mitchell's first 8 games with the New England Patriots as a rookie, he caught 7 passes on 15 targets.
Okay.
8. So the point is that maybe, okay, so
there was
a bye week played in there.
Who else was there, though, Lou?
No, but there was a bye week played in. So
he was the fifth option.
By week 10, you know, after being with Tom for 9 weeks in camp, by week 10, yeah, there we started 4 catches, 5 catches, and 8 catches in a game.
In the beginning also, think about this. Brady had so many different options. Hogan, Amendola, Edelman, Gronk. Was Bennett on that team then? I mean, so to me... It took him longer, not because he wasn't ready, because, dude, you're in the back of the line. We're not going to use you until we have to use you. We can slow play you. Plus, you've been hurt. It's going to be different for Harry. It's going to be baptism by fire. Get your ass out there and run a go round.
I do think there's a big, huge difference here when you're talking about win. You can plug and play win, and he's going to fill in. You've already seen it. With Harry, I think it's a different story. I think they're crazy if they don't go out and get themselves help at that position by week 8. You think they can go past week 8 and then bring in Harry and be convinced that they're going to be fine?
Listen, I have not changed my stance on this. Like, they need another body. I'm just saying, worst case scenario, okay, granted, he's healthy. That makes you better. Is that fair to say? It makes you better.
That's a different story.
But I said this all along. Yeah,
best case scenario.
Another wide receiver.
Right. If you can't get somebody, then Harry may be able to do
some of that stuff. And it's risky.
A lot risky.
And you're right. That was also the year that Gronk got hurt, like week 9, week 10. It was done. You know, so all of a sudden, week 9, week 10 is when Malcolm Mitchell started to wake up, right? They started using him more. But you can't, I don't think you can discard the fact that he had 9 weeks with him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe Jacoby Myers week 9 shows up, I don't know, after building this trust that Tom talks about, building the communication, and not having N'Keal Harry there now for, you know, he was hurt at the end of camp. And not for the first, 6 weeks? 6 weeks he can't practice at all? Can't play until week 8, week 9? You're losing that time. Does it like it took Malcolm Mitchell maybe 9 weeks. I don't know, 9 weeks to me, the season might be over by the time he comes back.
They have got to get themselves somebody else. The Antonio Brown thing is funny today. He comes out. He says, oh, yeah, I'll come back. You're paying me anyway, Patriots. Why not? I come back.
You guys follow the Patriots, tell them call me. They still got to pay me. So
that's unbelievable.
Might as well let me earn it.
I just don't see it happening. But they got to get somebody. All right, we'll get into more of that. We'll get into more of what Ben Watson had to say at 617-779-7937. Yesterday, we talked about the Red Sox making a move with the coaching staff for the pitchers. Well, it's starting to come a little bit into focus now. Why the Red Sox needed to make that change, and apparently it's got something to do with robots. We'll get to it and more coming up next.
It's Mud at Night with Wiggy, live from Encore Boston Harbor, tomorrow night from 6 to 8:30. Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
Rake in the savings at 495 Chrysler Jeep Dodge Rams. Ram Power Days, get huge savings on a new 2019 Ram 4x4 by visiting 495ram.com. Ben Watson just joined us earlier, his first interview since the Patriots released him earlier this week. We asked Ben if the door is to open for a return to the Patriots, and he said, quote, I think in the conversation with you all, he, meaning Bill, left the door open. When I talked to him, he said, we didn't have a roster spot. And we also asked Ben Watson if the Patriots approached him about restructuring his contract, and he said no.
That's a great question, by the way.
They did not. Great question, Glenn.
That was a good question. You've saved the best for last. You're a closer. That's what I've realized about you. You start really shaky, but I tell you what, man, you bring it in the end. It's a compliment. Why are you mad at me?
I'm not mad at you.
I just can't pay you a compliment.
I love you dearly. And what a good day for you. The record is intact.
Oh, I'm so
intact.
Happy.
Right.
You can catch the full interview with Ben Watson with OMF right now on WEI.com. By the way, Teddy Bruschi joins us at 4:30. The Giants have ruled out 4 offensive players, 4 big names. Saquon Barkley, the backup running back, Wayne Gallman also out, tight end Evan Ingram, and wide receiver Sterling Shepard, all 4 of those guys. That is 65% of the Giants' offense.
The line is up to 17.5 for tomorrow night's game, and this is with the weather forecast. The weather forecast tomorrow night, 1 to 2 inches of rain, winds at 20 to 30 miles an hour, and apparently gust peaking at 40 plus. This is for the game tomorrow night with a temperature of around 50 degrees.
Skip it.
Okay, hey, so this might be one of those 24-0 games, right?
Something like that. You need to do, just make sure you listen to us from 2 to 6. We'll basically do our show and basically like a pregame show, right? We're going to kind of double up.
We have the extended pregame show.
Sounds like some tough conditions for the Nuge tomorrow to be kicking at Foxborough.
Yes, very true.
2 winner-take-all games in the MLB playoffs tonight. Braves hosting the Cardinals, 5:02 first pitch. Then at 8:37 tonight, the Dodgers hosting the Nationals.
Go Dodgers.
I'm Tyler Devitt, and that is what is trending now on WEI and WEI.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I know how people feel about Dana Lavangi. I know how this pitching staff felt about the Dana Lavangi and this news. So I don't really think, knowing what I know about him, that if you worked every day with this guy, that you would fire him. I don't think Alex wanted to move on from him. So I just think that when he talked to us that day, I don't even know. So I don't know.
It's pretty easy to figure out who's doing.
How do you start making some of these moves without a GM in the first place?
All right, that's what we were talking about yesterday and what happened to Dana Lavangi and Alex Spear of the Boston Globe. I think somebody was talking to old Alex.
He answered a few of them.
Yeah, I think he got a little mole in his ear. Headline, why the Sox felt their pitching infrastructure needed change. Change felt inevitable as the year progressed, not necessarily because of the results, but perhaps more because of the tension that existed between Lavangi's traditional approach to game planning. Goes on to say, behind the scenes, there was a sense of oil and water dynamic never got resolved. Members of the coaching staff experienced a year-long tension between the way the Red Sox had prepared their pitchers quite successfully, should be noted, as recently as 2018, and how the team now wanted to game plan for opponents. There were disagreements on how to attack opposing lineups, arguments that sometimes consumed the coaching staff and led to less actual time being spent with coaching the players. By the way, that's the thing Lavangi does well. And later on in the story, he talks about how the Red Sox are not alone. The game is changing. It's all becoming stat-driven.
It's a battle.
It's TrackMan systems via StatCast. That's what teams are using, and robots are taking over the Red Sox.
Well, all we want is robot umps.
So where do we go, Lou? And I'm not saying that stats shouldn't be part of the game, stuff, this analytics stuff, is important. But are we getting away from, like, human beings are the ones that you're asking to go out there and do it, and somebody has got to work with the human beings?
I would say this. Let's start with this one. I know a lot of people, and they're firing Lavangi, and I just, like I said, I didn't agree with it. A lot of people say, well, you got to look at the way the year went. There was no adjustments. They had an awful year. You know, they now granted, a lot of it had to do with injuries, right? Like, you know, you could say in Alex's piece or whatever that maybe the Chris Sale's mechanics were off, and they sort of looked at Dana not being able to fix the mechanics. I forget, somebody else wrote that story in the Globe yesterday. Too. Now, does anybody really believe those mechanics with Chris Sale this year? Does anybody really believe that? Or do they believe that it was just wear and tear and he just wasn't healthy enough to pitch? He had a bad year.
Right.
So, you know, the part that jumps out at me is behind the scenes, like the one you just read, oil and water dynamic never got resolved. They experienced tension year long. But the way the Red Sox prepared their pitchers, quite successfully, it should be noted, as recently as 2018. What did they do last year, anyways, in 2018?
I think
they were pretty
won.
Good.
They won the World Series.
Hey, David Price pitched well also, right. Hey.
And how the team now wanted the game plan for opponents. So it's more of an analytical game plan to opponents. This was a change this year. They wanted to focus more on that.
So we thought...
So last year, you won the World Series. This year, we want to change our approach of how we want to attack hitters. More analytical. Like, as he points out, you know, get away from, like, Dana's expertise of, like, watching hitters, watching videos, dissecting videos, how to get guys out. sort of take that part of it and just push that aside a little bit more this year and just stick with the analytics. Stick with the numbers. How'd it work?
Not so good.
Okay. So is it the was it the program's fault? The new way to approach hitters analytically as opposed to maybe looking at real video? Maybe looking at game situations? Saying, hey, I want to attack Gleyber Torres with nobody on in the first base differently than I want to attack Gleyber Torres, bases loaded in two outs or one out, and I need a strikeout.
Right.
So is it just 2-0, 1-0, 0-2, how my pitcher feels, how the hitter feels, how he feels coming into the series? There's still that human element that we can't get away from. And another one, too, is Bradford. Bradford wrote a piece on this, specific change. He talks about Spears' article. He says, according to sources, there's an undeniable part of the pitcher's philosophy that the organization believes needs to be adjusted. It's time to start reintroducing more pitches in the heart of the plate. Start attacking the strike zone and then expand to the edges instead of beginning on the edges and venturing out even more.
Holy mackerel!
We all sat there and said, man, they pitch to the edges constantly. That's why they walk everybody. That's why they throw a lot of pitches. He asked Matt Barnes if the change is dramatically different than the year before. Barnes' answer was quick and succinct. Yes.
That's about as quick and...
But the thought now is that maybe they've gone to two extremes.
So that did not come from Lavangi.
So last year, you know, so this past year, there was a different philosophy in how to attack hitters. One in which, you know, the baseball people were butting heads with the analytics because they didn't believe in it as much as maybe the analytics department did, given that they were successful the year before getting guys out. They won a freaking World Series. So now they want to change it. So was it the pitching coach who was fighting this back and forth? Was he on the right side of this or the wrong side of this new program on how to approach hitters?
So the one thing that jumps out at me in all of this, Lou, is Alex Cora. And Alex Cora seems to me to be a guy who likes to get along with everybody. On the other hand, he has his own opinions. Is it possible, because we challenged him numerous times, certainly earlier in the year and even later on, he wanted not to turn the page, but to continue everything from the season before. Is it possible that internally they were sitting there constantly saying to Alex, nope, we need to change. We got analytics to tell us we need to change. He has players who are pissing and moaning, especially pitchers, who are pissing and moaning that they want to use analytics to change what they did in 2018. And he's clinging on to 2018. Well, is that only, possible?
Yeah, it is. And you know, I think that although Alex is a big analytic guy, and I think he believes in that approach, I just feel like these are baseball people, and they know that there's a balance. Alex talks about how there's disagreements about how to attack opposing lineups, arguments that sometimes consume the staff and led to less actual time being spent coaching the players. So those disagreements, so I can only imagine winning a World Series as a first-year manager, a first-year pitching coach, and going up to Seattle and saying, okay, we got to attack Edwin Encarnacion. We look at some of these guys in this lineup we faced in the past. This is how we've had success in the past, how we want to attack them. And then they come in and say, nope. Stick with our program. We'll get these guys out. Well, hold on now. I mean, you know, I'm watching film. I mean, this is what we did last year. We got reports on these. Nope. Stick with our program.
Does that have anything to do with all the wristbands that the catchers
yes.
were wearing?
Yes, that's
and
a big part
and
of
the
it.
Cards that the outfielders
which
were
is,
wearing?
Which is
where you're not wearing. We're
again,
holding.
Where you're going to place yeah. in the field for every hitter.
Which yeah. is fine.
Right.
Which, you know, right. there's, again, there
that
are certain
seemed like it worked.
Analytics in baseball is here. It's not going anywhere, and we have to live with it.
But is it getting too geeky?
But is it getting too, like Bradford said, it got too, went maybe they went too far.
Yeah.
Too much of an extreme.
Yeah.
Well, if they went too much of an extreme because of this new analytical approach, and you got the pitching coach who's fighting it, who maybe doesn't want to go to that extreme. So the program wasn't the problem. It was the pitching coach that was fighting a program that obviously wasn't working as well. You tell me.
It seems like
you read between the lines here in both these articles, and it seems like...
Who makes that decision?
It didn't work.
Who decides that that's the philosophy they're going to take?
Well,
if I'm the pitching coach, I would think that would be my decision.
Well, I would say this. I would say that you probably had internal fights with this because let's
yeah, but
face,
who's in charge?
Well, I was just going to say this. Dombrowski was in charge of overall
personnel.
Baseball operations. Here's the problem. Dombrowski's old school. Dombrowski is not one of these deep analytical guys. I'm sure there was an extent to where he'd go analytically because it's part of the game, as Lou said. But he was not a deep analytical guy. But the guy who owns the team. I think if you're asking where his direction would be, it's more of the analytics.
Okay, my thing is his nature. So ownership comes down to Bill and says, Bill, I want you to run the ball. Stop throwing it. I want you to go for two every single time. I've done a lot of research. The computers tell me that we're better off going for two regardless of the score.
Bill's already talked about these analytics, and he's not a big fan of them.
Well, I would
not
think,
that he doesn't use some of them, but he thinks he can see more. His eyes can tell him more watching the film of a game as to what the tendencies are and what he can exploit on the other team, as opposed to looking at the numbers and saying this is what they do on third down.
Like Bradford's article, he talks about where they were as far as just throwing pitches, right? And you look at like where they are in 2019, heart of the plate, 0-0. They were 25th in the majors as far as just throwing strike one. 2018, they were 15th, middle of the pack.
So it was by design.
So, yeah, 2018, you know, as far as the 19, rather, they threw more balls than anyone in baseball. Last year, they were 16th, middle of the pack. So it seemed like the approach last year was better. The results were there. I know you had healthier pitchers, but this year, there was a change. And the results didn't go as well.
But you know what it is, Lou?
So which...
Yeah.
Which year was better? So if there was more of an analytic approach this year to attacking hitters versus last year, and last year was more successful, is it the pitching coach or is the analytic department going a little too extreme?
I think it's obvious where it is, and I think you've got to have both of them to make it work. But I think what they're probably doing, and the ownership is looking at the failure of this year, when you go from 108 to 84, they may be looking at it and saying, well, let's look at what the other teams are doing. The Tampa Bay Rays, with $56 million, are using the analytics, and boy, it is paying off for them. Look at them. They're playing Game 5 Thursday night in Houston, okay? And you can look at the Dodgers. Friedman was part of Tampa Bay. Yep. Now he goes to L.A. They're doing analytics. The Yankees are now getting far more involved in analytics. Minnesota, another team that's been successful. Analytics, that's what they're looking at.
I get it, you know, and, you know, if I was Tampa and I had Morton, Snell, and Glasnow, and Diego Castillo, and Pagan, and these guys out of the bullpen, if, you know.
Bullpen's great.
I mean, I look at, like, Larry Rothschild. Okay, we'll go into, like, analytics. Larry Rothschild?
Yeah, that's how old is
65
now?
Years old. Yeah. So the Yankees, okay, I'm sure that they're absorbing some analytics, but Larry Rothschild? How about the Dodgers? Rick Honeycutt? He's 65 years old.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know that they're run by analytics, but I can guarantee you there's probably some button heads going on there. You know, in beautiful Houston, Brent Strome, he's 70. Okay? Old school. You give me Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander, and Zach Greinke, and I have a pretty good philosophy, too.
I don't know if I like Verlander on 3 days rest.
How about Carl Willis in Cleveland? He's 58, 60 years old. Yeah. So, yes, in Tampa Bay, yes, in Minnesota. Minnesota hired a guy from University of Arkansas, right? Analytic guy. You know, Kyle Schneider down there in Tampa, we know what they are, analytics. But
it's kind of like
there's such an extreme going on, and the answer's in the middle. But right. Some people just, I feel like they're just locked in on, nope, stick with this.
Right.
And to me, it explains the bullpen. You know, we got guys out there, they don't have big names, but we'll put a plan together. And if they attack pitchers the way our analytics department tells us, then they're going to be all-stars. Yeah, they're going to be great players.
I'm not buying that.
Sometimes it just comes down to just the human element, dude. I mean, mental part of it. Like, where are you? How do I get guys out? Like, just grind through it. And it's not all popping up in a computer and just putting a guy's name in there and saying he can have a 1.6 ERA if he follows our program.
So what do you think the reaction?
This isn't a freaking weight loss program.
You talk to these guys. What do you think the reaction is for major league pitchers when they've got some geek, maybe very well-educated? You got Harvard guys. You got MIT guys in there right now. Never played a game before. Maybe they played a few video games of MLB baseball, but they've never played a game. And they're sitting there basically breaking all these analytics down, and they're saying, this is what you need to do. What do you think the reaction is? Is it, okay, I'm going to absorb that, I'm going to take your recommendation, I'm going to go do it, or, hey, stick it up, you know?
No, I'll take it. I'll take it all. But, you know, give and take. Understand where I'm coming from as well. And I think that's probably led to, as they were talking about, a lot of the back and forth arguments. I can only imagine if I had a game plan to get a hitter out or get a lineup out, and we go out there and we stick to this other program, this other plan, and it doesn't work, how frustrating that should be when I'm sitting there watching a game going, I know what we should be doing right now, but I can't. and then I get blamed for it. I wouldn't be happy.
Okay? All right, we're going to get to the phone calls. We'll talk about this. We'll talk about Ben Watson. And are you ready for this? I heard somebody last night on television that I don't think I've ever, ever agreed with in my life. And I sat there just nodding my head. I was applauding. I was basically saying, you go, girl. And I could not believe it that I was in step with every single thing she said. Am I losing it? Or is, we got to figure this out. It's coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at OMF on WEEI. Before, during, and after the show at OMF on WEEI. Let's get you back to more of Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
Because of all of the controversy with the government, what would usually be hundreds, maybe even 1,000 fans gathering to them get off the bus or go to certain events has turned into just a much more thin crowd, dozens of fans maybe, Kevin. And in fact, those fans, while they're eager to come out and see these players, they don't want people to really know it. There were some fans that greeted the Lakers bus last night, but as soon as NBA entertainment cameras came over to show them being excited about the Lakers, we saw a bunch of fans hide their faces because they didn't want to be on record supporting the NBA. That is a huge change from what we've seen over here in the past.
Hiding their faces. That's Rachel Nichols reporting over there in Shanghai. It's unbelievable. Brian Lewis of the New York Post just tweeted this out moments ago. The silence is deafening at the Ritz-Carlton being used as a base in Shanghai by the Nets and the Lakers. Sean Marks, Kenny Atkinson went by without comment, as did players from both Brooklyn and L.A., as well as league executives. The situation in China is tense and tenuous, and nothing yet from LeBron. He's hiding from the media right now. The game is Thursday is the game.
He's not talking.
The game I don't think is going to be played. So
I'll say this. So, yeah, because it is.
Maybe that's why they'll do it.
If none of this happened, if Maury's tweet never went out there, wouldn't this be like a daily press conference?
Yeah, he'd be preaching.
But everybody, right? I mean, LeBron would have been on day two or day three. Yes. And he's out there all week talking about the NBA, talking about China, talking about this relationship, how excited they all are, you know, for playing in this game. That, you know, this has been going on for the last two or three days leading up to this game on Thursday. Now it's just, they don't want to comment on anything. They're just putting blinders on and hope it goes away.
It's embarrassing. It's not going away. And I'll tell you why it's not going away. And we had this conversation with Chris Mannix yesterday. Because this is how they operate in where, Lou?
Communism.
China. Okay, this is what they
Communists.
Do. Communists. They shut everything off. So we're talking extensively over here about Daryl Morey's tweet, as minor as it was. The people over there don't even know about it. So Twitter doesn't exist over there. They have a thing called Weibo, but that is all government controlled. And so anything, the time it comes up with Daryl Morey, it doesn't get out to anybody. So the people in China, unless they're hearing it in some underground means, have no idea there's a controversy. But the one thing they do know is they are stripping all signage, anything that that deals with NBA, National Basketball Association, Houston Rockets, Golden State Warriors, LeBron James. They are taking off signage on the side of buildings. They have guys hanging on there, pulling the signage off.
But yesterday we talked about, they had the guy in the one small gym with the roller with the extension on it, you know, painting over the Houston Rockets logo. What, that's one incident. And then you have the one guy, like you said, hanging from the building.
One guy,
piece by piece, unpeeling, unrolling the
same guy.
The wrap.
The poor guy gets 85 cents an hour.
So I just feel like there's so much propaganda.
That's what happens.
They're not like they're going around town and they're literally armies of people just tearing everything down. it's one situation here, one there, but so it's not like you a wholesale change.
Hold on, it is wholesale change. There's a lot of it going on.
Then we'd see more evidence of them tearing down the stuff.
You can't because they can't get it out of the country. That's the problem they're having right now.
There's tons
of
Americans
there. Americans can't get it out. There's no the internet connection doesn't work where they can get all the stuff out.
How'd they get
out?
The last two things out?
Some people are sneaking stuff out. That was the point I just made, is that the people in China don't even know about it. No, I think there is a massive program going on right now to tell the people the NBA is no good anymore.
Scrub the NBA from everybody's mind. It's like the people of China are all victims of total recall.
So here's the thing I can't understand, because we've been talking about it the last few days and watching it play out on social media. And I hate to say it, but there are too many people that for some reason just are so into this Trump derangement syndrome. I repeat again, Donald Trump is a problem with what is going on right now with the NBA in China, because he is not saying anything about Hong Kong and is not here recently because he's trying to work out a trade agreement. Okay, so he's not being helpful in any of this. Yet people that pick up this topic, when you tweet out, all they want to do is attack you because they think you're raving and checking off all the boxes and thinking Trump is a hero. I want to applaud somebody for actually looking at this for what it really is. It's a violation of human rights. It's a repressive government that is trying to stifle their people. Okay? That's what this is all about. So what does Jemele Hill do? She goes on CNN last night. When have we ever agreed with Jemele Hill? Do you
Not
guys
too
ever
often.
Remember?
Not too often.
She goes on last night and she talks about the NBA has basically set themselves up.
Keep in mind, Jake, that this is the same league who delayed having the All-Star game in Charlotte because of the controversial bathroom bill. This is the same league that basically, as Greg Popovich, Steve Kerr, LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, many of their players have been outright critical of the president of the United States. And their entire response has been, hey, let these guys say what they politically believe. This is the same league where Commissioner Adam Silver was dancing at the gay pride parade on a float in New York City. So they have made being socially responsible a part of their brand, and that's why there's a different expectation for them.
Hallelujah. I give her total I give her total credit. She's, here.
You said
she,
it all.
No, she loved it before when the players were socially responsible, and unlike a lot of these people out there right now, she is staying consistent. She is saying, why aren't they socially responsible now? They're collecting all of this money out of China. They're getting paid for all their shoe contracts. Why are they not doing it now?
But I disagree when you said this is what it's all about, right? To me, what it's all about, because I said this before, that if this was the MLB and they stuck their foot in it, the Major League Baseball and their players, you know, are not promoting themselves as the woke league like the NBA. Like, they're not out there, you know, every opportunity try to make the world a better place, you know, giving their opinions on certain social issues and civil rights and feel like it's their duty to do it, whether it's a player or whether it's coaches in this league. So that's where they've set themselves up. You know what I mean? So that's why I think it's a story. And it's not just a story about, like, you know, supporting a communist country and then start ripping other companies that deal with China. Because if this Maury never tweeted that out, they'd be over in China. They've been there for years. We've never brought this up before. But it's almost like they're condemning, they're running and hiding, because Maury actually was on the right side of this. Because and the league that promotes itself as the woke league that cares about the things that Hong Kong is going through right now in their fight is silent.
It's hypocrisy. It's
just
hypocrisy.
Because it's the NBA and how they've handled things in the last few
years.
It's
actually worse, because everyone knew that the way the NFL fought and how conservative they were and what their roots were based in and what was important to them. But here we go. Here comes the NBA realizing, and this is the part I love, that they're no different than the NFL. They're the same. There's this big facade, you know, so all the players, they jump out and they say the right thing when they know there's going to be lots of applause, Twitter applause, pats on the back. Hey, great job. Way to stand up. If it's unsafe or there's going to be any criticism, they're not stepping out of their lane, period.
To that point, Jason Whitlock agrees with you.
All that some people are saying is like, cut it out, NBA, Adam Silver, Steve Kerr. You guys are not political activists. You're not social justice activists.
I don't think that's
your business people.
I don't think that's
because when China tells you to shut the hell up, everybody shuts the hell up. Everybody loses their courage when there's money on the line. And we crucified the NFL for protecting its bag. When they say, hey, man, this kneeling thing's hurting us ratings-wise, and we're a business here trying to do a TV show, we crucified the NFL. But now the NBA tries to protect this, and everybody, cat got my tongue.
This is funny. I got to play this line from Aliens because what? This is what. Yeah, there's a scene in the movie Aliens, the original one, right, where they all kind of realize that they're screwed and they've tried to fight the alien and they just keep getting their butts kicked and the game is over. The facade, the curtain has been pulled. You have been exposed, and this is, I guarantee you, what LeBron James is saying right now.
Game over, man. It's game over. What are we gonna do now? What are we gonna do?
Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
They don't know what to do with themselves. What do we? We've outed ourselves.
What are we gonna do?
That is what's happened to them. So the hypocrisy is it's at the highest level right now with them. And I'm not surprised. I don't know if you are that they're all like the human starter pistol, LeBron James. Who speaks out on everything as long as it's supports his brand and everything that enables him to make money? Crickets.
Well, our girl Jamel said she would be surprised if LeBron says anything.
I would be surprised if LeBron said anything because, again, they're looking at what happened as a result of this Daryl Morey tweet. If you're LeBron James and you also are an empire unto yourself, I would not be surprised if he were quiet. Now, what does that mean for somebody who has this entire campaign called More Than an Athlete? I don't know.
So, man, she's right. She's totally right. And the thing is that going forward,
what is the
because
game?
I don't have a problem. They're citizens of this country. I don't have a problem if these guys talk and didn't have a problem when they talked before, even though I may disagree with a lot of what they say. But you're showing no consistency because of the fear factor that it might take money out of your pocket. That's hypocrisy. So don't come back now when you come back to the country and decide that you're going to go out and become the social justice police out there because it's not going to work and it's
only
not going to work
convenient.
In the public. So I want to congratulate Jamel Hill because she
it's
is
one of
being
us.
Consistent.
One
okay?
of us.
So and Jason Whitlock, I kind of expect the way he talks, but it's amazing to me because
Whitlock's right too.
Because Jamel Hill is doing exactly what I hear all the time from another old white guy who's just sitting there and saying the same old tired stuff.
Cat like got my Trump. Tongue.
Right. Jamel Hill, old white guy.
Whitlock's 100% right. When the NFL was stuck in the middle of it, and they're in one of those spots where it was just like you said, Christian, your movie Alien.
Yeah.
What do we do?
What do we do?
You know, and that's
they're on to us.
The NFL was dealing with Colin
Kaepernick. Build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Like, why don't we try that?
What do we do? You know, and oh, by the way, it's affecting ratings. What do we do? Yeah. I don't know, let's try to get the players. Let's build this coalition. Oh, no, that'll work.
No.
All right, how about we don't, we let them do what they want. You want to go in the field, stay in the locker room, whatever, you choose. Get crushed for that.
Yeah.
And who's crushing them the whole time? The NBA.
Game over, man.
On their soapbox and just ripping that league for never being able to handle things the right way and doing what's right and how dare they and it's going to come back to them. You got Cuban down there talking about pigs getting slaughtered.
Yep.
You name it. And then they find out that they're no different.
They're the same.
What do we do?
It's so funny. They're this holier than thou mentality that they're doing the right thing. They're making all the right changes. You know, they're putting you know what's important and above money, and they're not.
No,
none
and this,
of them.
And this is why. This is why I think it's a big story, right? It's not really about what's going on in China and Hong Kong.
No.
It's about the league that got involved in it all.
Right. Well, how about last night in Philadelphia for a preseason game? There were two fans that had signs very
similar. Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia.
Pennsylvania.
Not Shanghai. Right, Pennsylvania.
Oh, so Philadelphia,
and
China?
They had signs basically, you know, rooting on for Hong
Free
Kong.
Free Hong Kong.
Free Hong Kong. And guess what happened? They took the signs away from them.
Okay. I think they threw them out.
They threw the signs out.
No, the people? Are you?
Well, the guy stood up and he started chanting it because he was pissed off that they were actually trying to take the signs away from him.
And then
so
they
he got up
them.
And he started, he started screaming, "Free Hong Kong.
Get him out."
Get
him out.
In the seat, and then they moved him out of there. But is that what we're going to face now?
If so fans, they told him there's no foul language and no politics. This when is, have you ever heard that in an NBA game?
It's unbelievable.
Like the foul language, touching players. We had that all last year in the NBA. You know, say, you can't say whatever you want
Kevin
to the player.
Garnett would be out of the league 20 years ago.
Now all of a sudden they're throwing in, oh, and by the way, no politics either.
This is unbelievable.
Now if the guy was holding up a sign that said F Trump.
Yeah.
Would he have been ejected?
It'd be a free whoever.
No politics.
Fill in the blank.
No politics.
But who's the
would
guy?
He be injected? I don't think
Lou,
so.
Lou, you know what it's doing?
Free Meek Mill.
You know what,
again.
You know what it's doing, Lou? It is opening up a zillion new problems for the NBA.
It'll pass,
That's
though.
What it's doing.
No,
a zillion of them.
It'll pass, but they'll have zero credibility when they start talking about anything else in my mind.
Yeah. Steve Kerr, when's he going to open his mouth again?
Game over, man.
Well, still,
once they get past this.
He's got his brother or whatever, his brother-in-law or whatever. Who apparently
he's a teacher of Chinese history. Yeah, it's some university. Yeah. He called him up. His brother-in-law.
Steve is suddenly
hey,
a
what
slow,
do you know about this China thing?
Steve is a slow learner. You would figure in 24 hours he would do something. Actually, Popovich did say something yesterday, okay? And it went on a totally different road. Totally different road. We'll get to that coming up as well. We'll get to your phone calls. 617-779-7937.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.